This is an ABC podcast.
I'm Juanita Phillips, and welcome to Tall Tales and True, the best of live storytelling across Australia. Ever just wanted to get away for a quiet toilet break? Imagine trying to do just that on a remote Kimberley island when you reach down and touch something potentially deadly. Are the strangers around you going to cut it in your fight for survival? Dave Pears is on stage at Spun Stories in Darwin. And a warning, there is a bit of swearing in this episode.
Well, I'll never forget, like 12 years ago, when I was getting a private flight through the Kimberleys, except it was with the Royal Flying Doctors, and credit to them. But at the time, I was first mate on a landing barge, just delivering fuel and stores and cargo through the remote areas of the Kimberleys. One of our runs was Troughton Island. It was a beautiful island, surrounded by coral reef, about 16 k's off the mainland. Now, on this particular delivery voyage, there was spring tides and we're going to do some load of work on the barge landing. It's basically like a sandy boat ramp. So we've gone in late one afternoon, dropped off the front end loader and the machinery, anchored the barge off in the channel, ready for an early start. Bright and early, me and myself and the engineer, crack of dawn, out there in the tinny, into the shore. So his job was the front end loader and I'm keeping the dinghy afloat. So it's about 7 metres of tide range, so it just dries out there real quick. So my job was to keep the dinghy afloat and with the tide running out over the reef, several large resident crocodiles in the area, I was keeping the dinghy no more than knee-deep of water throughout the morning. So that required moving the anchor and the tinny over and over and over again just to keep it in the water. And then, finally, about 8 o'clock, tides turned. This is the moment I've been waiting for all morning. So there's four of us living on this boat. We've got one toilet, one shower, and they're tiny. So I'm going to get to go up to the residence quarters this morning and go about morning business, undisturbed, looking over the ocean. So back to the anchor shift. So out I go, I'm treading over the reef, walking out, and gone to grab the anchor, and I'm steadying myself on the reef. If anyone's walked over the coral reef, you know how hard it is to walk out there barefoot. And put my hand down and feel a suction cap on my thumb. So I grabbed the anchor, looked over, and I've got my hand fair on this octopus that's all of a sudden gone bright blue circles all over it. So it was not quite as big as my hand, but it was pretty bloody big. And if anyone knows how full on the depth blithering octopuses are, I did. It's like, well, fuck, that was close. It didn't bite me. So I carried the anchor ashore. So I'm wandering up. It's 500 metres to the caretaker's residence. I look over. Paul's going flat out in the front end loader. I'm going for my morning shit. I'm wandering up. I'm about 200 metres up dirt road, thinking that was close. Next thing I'm dizzy and nauseous, and I'm thinking far out. And I look around, I'm by myself. The rest of the crew, all two of them are on the barge sleeping because they're too lazy. And so me and Paul were working. So I was like, do you hastily walk, run, whatever? I don't know. So I'm thinking, fuck, 300 metres to go. Walk up there, it's 8 o'clock in the morning. So I made it to the door, knock, knock, knock on there. These people haven't seen anyone for 4 weeks. So fuck, and they open the door. The first thing they want to do is dork. So I've just walked straight through, laid on the floor in the lounge, knowing full well if it gets any worse, they're going to have to breathe for me. So I said, excuse me, I've just been touched a blithering octopus, I'm feeling dizzy, nauseous, and if I pass out, please, you're breathing for me. And they're like, well, what else do we do? I said, just keep me fucking alive. I said, So, it's been a while, 12 years. So I've forgotten their names, but anyway, old mate and old mate's wife. Old mate's wife's on the sat phone ringing the flying doctors, like pretty well right then. And old mate's talking to me and describing what happened. I just put my hand on there, didn't feel a bite. Anyway, I'm not feeling right. And normally wouldn't even worry about this, but always dizzy. So they rang there, the crew, and mind you, this is Easter Monday. Next you know, she gets the phone. They won't be too long, just 4 hours. Like, mind you, we're in the middle of nowhere now, 4 hours. Like, righto. Next you know, the ship's crew, the other two of them are on their way up, and we're all stuck in this little donga. I'm lying on the floor. They're looking at me like I'm some kind of specimen on the floor. So then the owners, the other bloke, his wife, rings up the barge company, my boss, tells him what happened. How about I just divert an offshore helicopter for you, pick you up straight away and take you to hospital? But it won't be anyone else. You'll just be cargo. Well, what did I want to do? Well, I can't make a decision. So by then, at that time, I've got the remaining crew members standing there. No offence to anyone that's old, but the youngest was 55. So they're there. I thought I was panicking, because I was. My heart was just, like, beating, you could see it. And they're just chain-smoking. So here I am. If I need CPR, I'm going to get more cigarette smoke in my lungs right now than fresh air. So I said, I'll take my chances with the four of you guys. Best of luck, please. I've got a young family. So 10 minutes has gone by now, so I thought, I'm still alive. I ring my wife, so I'm all okay. As far as I'm concerned, I'm good. Ring my wife, didn't make things better. Said to her what happened. I got four young spring chickens here, chain smoking, looking after me. And don't fear. I don't remember what she exactly said to me that day, but she just remembers Terry Irwin had just lost Steve. And we had a young daughter. And here I am, laying on the floor. So then, I was all okay. The flying doctors arrived 4 hours later. Next thing you know, they've rolled through the door with a bloody mobile hospital. Super efficient, credit to them. Now they come, and within about 30 seconds, I had more sensors on than a V8 Land Cruiser on my chest. I had tubes poked in everywhere, in my legs. I was strapped into this stretcher like a criminal and banged into the plane. Next thing I'm in the plane, all of in about 38 seconds. Plane flashes up, the nurse is running through, checking my blood pressure and all the other stuff, and I don't really remember, but all I just remember is a port engine just squealing its freaking head off. So I'm strapped in the stretcher, like a straitjacket, and the engine's like, I don't like flying, and they stop the plane. So here I am, finally got safety here, plane breaks down. And I can only just twist my head because I couldn't move my shoulders at all. I look over and there's my engineer, because back, this is 12 years ago, so work health and safety wasn't strict. So Paul's there, thongs, shorts, no shirt, my engineer, and helping the pilots fix the plane. So I was just like, to the nurse, I've lived through today. You're going to give me a fucking heart attack if he's fixing the plane. Can you let me know what he's doing? It's okay. Pilots are doing the work. Okay. He looks like he's got the spanners. But so next thing you know, they've shut the fuselage. Planes flashed up. No more squealing. It was just a loose belt, they told me. And off we went. Then I literally just passed out in the plane. I don't remember. I woke up in Derby. I said, here we are. Checked in Derby Hospital. And that whole day, I've just... thankfully, hang on to what I was going to that caretaker's office for the first start in the morning. It was just like the biggest relief that afternoon when I thought, I'm alive. Still didn't get to hang it like a nice morning pleasure, undisturbed. It was never undisturbed. But anyway, credit to the people that did help me through focusing and maintaining my sanity and trying to remain calm, because it's not easy when you know that anything can happen right now and you can't prepare for it. Just going to pass out. So, yeah, that's my story. The Blue Ring Octopus didn't beat me. I'm here to tell the story, and thanks for listening.
Thank you, Dave. Dave was performing at Spun Stories, a live storytelling event and podcast created in Darwin, hosted by Jess Ong, with story production by Joanna Bell. Next on Tall Tales and True, how an old tin of money sparked a security emergency in a primary school.
The principal had freaked out. She had run through the playground where the Year Sixes were gathered, because one of these Year Sixes had a parent who was a cop. And she went up to the cop and she said, we've got a major emergency. And he goes running through the playground. And all the kids are like, wow, the principal's running.
To hear that story and more, subscribe on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Juanita Phillips. Talk again soon.
Stand by. from the team that brought you Finding Drago.
This is Finding Desperado. I'm Cameron James. I'm a comedian and a podcaster, and along with my best friend Alexi Toliopoulos, I'm a critically acclaimed investigative journalist for the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Welcome to a new mystery. And just like the last one, it all begins with a book.
The 2005 edition of the Guinness World Records.
Home to the most outstanding and amazing feats of human achievement imaginable. From the world's biggest pumpkins...
to that lady with those ginormous bulging eyeballs.
After skimming through this glorious golden tome, one record really jumped out at us as extremely strange. A record held by a man claiming to be the world's youngest filmmaker. A record that we believe is fake. This is a story about trickery, lost films, famous frauds, and possibly fake Guinness World Records.
This is Finding Desperado.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.